Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquez and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
My name's Tom Marquez, El Presidente, your fearless leader for the next 2 hours, where we will embark upon giving you the best knowledge out there in the world so that you can conquer your world of sports. Again, my minions, my name's Tom Marquez, El Presidente. The numbers, the digits to get to me is 917-889-8516. Mark that down because you're going to need it throughout the show to talk with me or Cliff, who's, by the way, going to be coming up here in just a moment from Radio Speed Talk, going to be breaking down what a great race out in Pocono. Can somebody please tell me why IndyCar ever left there to begin with? We're going to talk about them, obviously, up in Toronto, back on the road courses or street courses, however you want to call it. And then in the second segment of racing, we're going to let the hell fury come out on Tony Stewart. We'll talk to you a little bit about why we're going to do that, as well as recap the big race out there in Daytona where JJ sweeps it again. An incredible feat by him. We'll try to fit in some NHRA for you as well. Meet the Makers at the top of the hour. Going to catch up with them in their travels. And at 10:30, if you have not called in the show before that point, you want to make sure you do that, because at 10:30, it's going to be kind of like an open mic Saturday. It is fantasy football preseason lineup. We're going to talk about that myself, and I'm going to guide you through 30 minutes of getting ready for your fantasy football draft. It's all right here on The Balance on Saturday morning. My name's Tom Marquez. Myself and Cliff Channon will be back in just a few moments to talk with you, my minions, about racing. We'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Speed Talk is a show about racing, both national and local.
We also give our opinions and thoughts on the happenings of the week.
On top of that, we also include interviews from all tiers of racing.
And don't forget the segment Do You Know, which gives you more knowledge than you can handle.
Really, Kenny? More knowledge than we can handle?
Join Tom, Kenny, and me, Cliff, weekly on Speed Talk as we give you the lowdown on the racing world.
Catch us on The Balance and other affiliates weekly.
Don't forget to visit us at RadioSpeedTalk.com.
Speed Talk, the racing show you won't soon forget.
So you're not good at sports. It's a very small part of life.
Sports, 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 sports. Bart, Bart rides up in the front seat today because he's a good guy at sports.
After a 24-year absence from this tricky triangle, Indy cars are back in Pocono and faster than ever.
Start those engines!
Coming off of turn number three, the side says, let's Pocono. The green flag waves, and we are racing. Dave Kinscliff loses the rear end of the car, makes heavy contact. The green flag is back out, and it will be Marco Andretti first across the line.
Marco Andretti, our race leader, is coming down pit road.
They're having a problem getting the fuel nozzle out.
We got a problem with Bouvier. The car sits perpendicular to the wall.
Scott Dixon brings the car in. It's been a nice trouble-free race. He's been slowly but surely moving up.
The hometown favorite has a 3.4-second lead.
Contact on pit road between Ryan Hunter-Reay and Takuma Sato.
Sato was coming in way too fast.
Green flag is out side by side. Marco Andretti, Tony Kanaan, they'll challenge each other into turn number one, and Marco will make it look easy.
Ryan Hunter-Reay back on track right now. Going to try to salvage some points.
Cola crew will go to work. A little slow on the left front tire. In fact, a lot of problems. Another mistake on pit lane plaguing the RC Cola crew. How about the stop for the 9 car of Scott Dixon as he was able to get in and out and keep the lead?
Only hit his wing.
Tony Kanaan has now dropped way off the pace. He'll come back to pit lane.
And Marco Andretti goes for the lead.
Slingshot and gets it done.
Jump Marco a little to the high side. Will Power, Scott Dixon got around him. There's the race off the pit lane. Scott Dixon out in front. Honda out in front.
The streak in NASCAR from first, second, third. Andretti has flipped all the way back to ninth because he has to save fuel.
Are you sure he won't even make it?
Here they come to take the white flag. And IndyCar's return to the tricky triangle. Ganassi Racing will score a 1-2-3 finish. Dixon, Kimball, and Franchitti will fill the podium.
For the 30th time in his career, Scott Dixon gets the win. The celebration begins.
It's crazy. 200th win for Honda, 100th win for Target, 1-2-3 for Ganassi.
Chip's happy, so that's good. It's a while since I've seen a smile on his face or mine after race for our first podium of the year.
It's been a very up and down year, a very trying year, and we've managed to get back on top.
All right, welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Marquis. El Presidente, what an exciting race it was out in Pocono, Pennsylvania. Joining us now is Mr. Cliff Tanner. Cliff, welcome back to The Balance. I feel like we've got to just do a whole round of hugs and introductions and stick a hello, my name is Cliff sticker on your shirt.
What's going on, my man?
How you doing, buddy? How you doing? Did you catch some good fish? I know you were doing some fishing over the holiday weekend, and you and I were talking a little bit about your big fish you were reeling in. And did you not tell me you caught the biggest fish of your life?
Well, the biggest bass of my life, not the biggest fish.
Oh, biggest bass. Sorry.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Biggest bass. Let me ask you this, Cliff. Was it a wide mouth bass or?
Yes, it was a big mouth bass, yes.
Well, you know, because I had to go with the big mouth. Cliff gets his first big mouth bass. How fitting that was. So, well, that's good. You know, I still have a singing big mouth bass here in the Balance Studio. You know, so I'll have to bring that out sometimes. It's one of those motion sensors. So if I don't keep it off, it just goes off like crazy. It becomes one of those very annoying big mouth basses.
Right. Yes. Again, I've seen them.
Cliff Tanner, one of the hosts of Radio Speed Talk that joins us every Saturday for their expert analysis and breakdown of a week in racing, of what has happened last week and what's to come up this week. And what a race last week, Cliff, out in Pocono. IndyCar returns there. And I guess the question is, why did they ever leave? Because it really is a great race. And I love the hashtag that we were using throughout the race. What turn four? So the tricky triangle, the tricky three is what they call it. And a fantastic 1-2-3 for Chip Ganassi. And not such a good day for the Andretti. So let's break it down. You know, you look at a race out in Pocono, I think as a race car fan in general, but especially if you're an IndyCar fan, it was a very special race to watch.
Well, I got to be honest with you. To answer your question right off the bat, the reason they left Indy is his name is Tony George, Pocono, excuse me.
True.
That's your first problem there. But now that he's gone and they're getting things back, I think we're going to start seeing IRL in a lot of tracks that they were at in the past. And they're starting to realize that the big super speedways and the bigger tracks are going to be where the money's at in the future. Yeah, man, a great finish for Ganassi, man. You know, and I think the sweetest finish out of all of that would be Charlie Kimball, man. What a great guy. He's got diabetes. He drives through all that. And you could just see him improving every year in every race. And, you know, to finish second, granted, you know, if you listen, it's if you don't finish first, you finish last. But, man, what a great run for that kid.
Oh, absolutely, and I can't believe I don't like him. A little inside joke for our minions. Those that follow our show very, very regularly will remember that, you know, we were just in a hustle doing our Indy 500 show. I was actually talking about another driver, and I was not referring to Charlie Kimball. So now every time the name Charlie Kimball comes up, we see him on TV. Hey, look, there's the guy you don't like, Tom. So, no, I love Charlie Kimball. What a great race it was for him out there at Pocono. Now, I want to – and it will certainly get into some of this other talk about the race, but I want to talk about not a good day for Andretti Motorsports. And Andretti, who's really just proven themselves to be a dominant force in the IndyCar circuits this year so far, Pocono is one race where they want to walk away and forget. And for Andretti and at Pocono especially, it really was kind of a kick in the gut.
Well, it was, you know, and every race team is going to get a kick in the gut somewhere through the year. But to do as poorly as they did, it was kind of reminiscent to go back to what happened to Hendrick, three races ago when I think they're back in Michigan when their top guy was 28. So, you know, they'll bounce back. I have no doubt about that. But Andretti is far from out of it. And, you know, there's been talk going along all the way that Honda is better on the bigger speedways, and it was just a matter of time before they broke out. But when you got three guys finish the top three, wow. I mean, that's the first time ever I believe that's happened in any period with all three teams finishing. So, you know, that's a good boost. Brant Kaney definitely needed that third place finish because he has been having a real bad year. Still not sure if he'll be able to, you know, contend for the title this year. But trust me, the Andretti boys will be back. His clip crashed out early. You know, that poor guy, he has like three or four good races and then two or three bad ones. I don't know what's up with him, but he'll be back.
Well, he seems to do well on the road courses or the street courses, and up there in Toronto, obviously his homeland up there. So certainly I think that he'll do well this weekend up in Canada. But, yeah, you know, it was a frustrating day for Hinchcliffe. Just right out the gate, just slams into the wall there. A little concerned at first when he got out of the car. He was walking with a little bit of a limp. He banged his knee a little bit. But it turned out that he was completely fine. What I enjoyed, and I'm a big Hinchcliffe fan and friend of Hinchcliffe, I was enjoying having him there in the broadcast booth. If you watch the television broadcast booth, they brought him up there to the booth, and he kind of did a color analyzation throughout most of the race until there was about 30 or 40 laps left. He really gave a really good view of what's going on right now today with this. A lot of times, you know, you have a lot of those old drivers who have gone from IndyCar and are in the booth, and that's what they do. And you know, nothing against that. You know, you look at names that have done that. But to have an actual driver who's actually was in that race, has qualified on that track 24 hours ago, given some expert analysis of what the cars are doing on the track at that time, I thought that was pretty cool, pretty classy of ABC to do. But moving back over to Marco Andretti, on one hand, Marco scored a top 10 with many title when so many title contenders really struggled. But the alternative is that the third generation star failed to win yet another race that he has dominated and captured the pole for. And I talked with you about this on text yesterday. I think it's time for the Andretti's to look at the crew chief situation. I don't know if it's chemistry. I don't know what it is, but you could hear it on the radio when he was running out of gas. Marco's voice said it all. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And that at the end of the race, when he got out of the car The longest walk ever, I'm sure, of his life, and knowing that every camera in the world was on him, and then him have to do an interview after the fact, Marco was not a happy guy, and he's not always the most pleasant guy around the media anyway, and that just added to the fuel to the fire. I felt sorry for the kid. I really did. And I like Marco. He's got a lot of energy. He's got a lot of zest. He's obviously got the Andretti blood running through him. But something's going on with that team. They can't get it right.
Well, and you're right. You know, that's part of it. And unfortunately, when you have a run where you want to win and you want to win so badly, even the crew chiefs know, you know, in the back of their mind, their jobs are on the line almost every day. But when you start doing things like that, you tend to take chances. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, you can say what you want. Everybody laughs and, well, it's the Andretti curse. It's this, it's that. There's no curse. It's just, you know, it's just one of those things that happen. But, yes, I totally agree. They're probably going to be looking at the crew chief situation to run out of gas when you're the only guy in Andretti that's making a good run for the, you know, to get a good top 10 finish. And it is frustrating. And, yeah, the guy's got a hot head and all that. And he seems to have gotten that a little bit more under control this year as far as on the racetrack. So, yeah, chemistry has a lot to do with it. And when you say, let's take a chance, if you run out of gas when you're running a good race, yeah, I'd be a little ticked off myself.
Well, I don't know how much power Marco actually has, but I can guarantee you one thing. When the doors were closed and when he was spending time with Daddy and Grandpa, I would not be surprised if we don't see a change here soon. Maybe not this week. It's probably a little late to make that happen this week. But, you know, you look with the series running mostly street courses over the rest of the summer, Andretti will definitely look back at the strongest part of his schedule and likely wonder why the hell he didn't make more of it. And, you know, yeah, the driver certainly has to drive the car. When you have the lead and you have the shot to win, so many factors were in Marco's favor. See him run out of gas at the end of the race, and to hear that radio communication between Marco and his crew chief right toward the end of the race, where the crew chief was basically yelling at Marco saying, slow it down, and maybe it was partly Marco not listening to him and not slowing it down because he wanted to win the race. Who can blame him? He's a race car driver. But certainly, so there's got to be some changes made. But we look at some of the other drivers out there at Pocono, kind of where does everybody else stack up? Team Penske, Helio Castroneves, veteran, made most of the middling car and capitalized on misfortunes of his closest championship challengers to extend his title lead to 23 points over second place, Ryan Hunter-Reay. So we look at Helio. I always have a problem with that name. I don't even know why. Helio Castroneves, we look at him. How do you think he raced last Sunday out there at Pocono?
Well, you know, he's going to get smart now. He's got to be smart and get some good finishes because, you know, 26-point lead doesn't sound like a lot, but it is an Indy car. And, you know, the guy's got some talent, and sometimes he gets a little impatient at times. But, you know, he'll be there at the championship run. I think we're going to see one of the closest points finish we've seen in a long time here. Of course, I guess he had really top last year after what Ryan Hunter-Reay did, but I think it's going to be good, and they'll be fine. Penske will be fine. But, you know, Castroneves is going to be the Penske driver that's going to make it happen.
Right, absolutely. Well, you know, I got a hats off. 1-2-3 to Chip Ganassi. Obviously, Scott Dixon taking the checkered flag. Finally putting it all together in a full race of all three cars. And the effort was really spearheaded, I think, anyway, by race winner Scott Dixon. The All-Canassi podium on Sunday at Pocono may have re-energized Dixon's Championship Series hopes. Remember just how far back Dixon had to battle just to capture his first championship in 2003. We could look at this could be a shot in the arm for our friend from the across the pond, as they would say, and really do a good job in this championship run.
Most definitely. Dixon's a good driver, and he's actually had some pretty brilliant races this year. And Honda's just been having some issues with their cars. I think they're getting that under control. And again, as we get into the bigger speedways, I think you're going to see Honda become more and more dominant. And Dixon's a good road course driver, too, so don't count him out anywhere, especially coming up in Canada here.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, another name that I want to talk about, which we don't talk a lot about here, is Justin Wilson. I think he's doing a great job and really doing some strong.
Are you there? Hello.
Hey, Cliff, are you with us?
Yeah, I've been here the whole time, dude.
Oh, my gosh. We just totally lost our board and everything. One of those things.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah, everything went blank.
Oh, man. I had a feeling that's what happened.
Oh, boy. One of those days, let me tell you. We're going to take a break. We're going to get right back and we'll regroup right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
All right, welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Joining us is Mr. Cliff Tanner of Radio Speed Talk. Cliff, how are we doing, sir? Are you with us, Cliff?
Hello, sorry about that. I had a few
minutes. Oh, this time it was you, man. You had me freaking out again.
My bad.
Oh, my gosh. What in the world happened? I am just baffled as how so much could go wrong at the same time. Well, that's
it
okay.
It happens, man. That's part of the radio, bro.
Hey, we regroup and we move on. we were recapping to get back on track here. We were recapping the race out in Pocono. So real quickly, and then we're going to take another break and get back on schedule with NASCAR and everything. But real quickly here, give us a quick summation, if you will, of the race out there in Pocono and what we can look forward to going forward here in this week at Toronto.
Well, I got to be honest with you, I didn't get to see a whole lot of it, but I will tell you this much. The part I did see, there was some doggone good racing. And I think Indy is going to move into one of their best years, you know, both money-wise and getting popularity because they're starting to run at these bigger tracks. And it was very cool. But once again, you know, the guy I love watching, and you were talking about Justin Wilson, and that guy's just been improving. And he's done it quietly, which is pretty cool. But Joseph Newgarden, the top five again, man. I mean, you know, that Sarah Fisher team is just awesome right now. Hello?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh, boy. But, yeah, no, with Sarah Fisher and the problems that they've had in the past, certainly it's remarkable to see where they're at.
Well, I totally agree, and it's good to see a hometown girl like that owning a race team. Granted, I mean, she got some help with that, but to see her starting to bloom, and, you know, we talked about this a couple years ago and the people she brought up, and, you know, I said Joseph Newgarden was a good choice, but he's made far more leaps and bounds than I thought he would. He's had a pretty good year. Granted, he had some issues at times. But, I mean, look, he was in the top two or three in several races for a while. And to finish out with a top five in Pocono shows me that he's improved and has enough patience to go on the bigger tracks.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. We're going to take a break, and we get back. We're going to be talking more NASCAR, and we'll be back right on track right here on the Dallas Radio Network.
For you, you better watch your back.
I'm coming through.
I'm coming through. So get out of the way.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Shuffling down the back straightaway. Jimmy Johnson once again able to gain the top spot.
Strong.
Man, that is strong.
That's a power move
you
by that 48.
And nobody can do anything. You know, it's easy to say, well, you got to do this and jump on the outside of him. You can't get to him.
No, that was a power move. He just powered away from the pack as they come down through there.
You got to get wide. White flag is out. Next flag will decide it.
Wow.
Tony Stewart feeling good, and how about Kurt Busch in that outside lane with help from David Gilmour?
Oh, here we go.
We got trouble.
There we go. That's it.
Like I said, you lead at the white.
That's it.
You're good to go. But they may
no
race to the finish.
They're going to let them race back here.
That happened over in turn two, so they got plenty of room.
Wow. Right. Let them race, boys.
Hopefully they're cleared when they get back down there.
Tony Stewart won this race last year. He's won it 29,
shoving the 14. I don't know if it's going to be enough, but...
Through turns three and four for the final time. Off the corner, here comes Jimmy Johnson. He's dominated the race. Now he can see the finish line. That's Busch in the outside lane. Not making a move.
Oh.
Trouble behind
somebody
him.
Turned Danica.
Danica and others. Jimmy Johnson gets the win at Daytona.
Yeah, she got turned right there.
That was a dominating performance by the 48
yes,
team tonight.
Was.
Let
oh, yeah, guys,
lines.
Thank you.
That's another race, the last three or four races, and I know people get tired of hearing us talk about him, but the last three or four races, he's dominated these races.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Obviously, talking about Jimmy Johnson. We're back here on the balance. My name is Sean Marquis, El Presidente. So glad that my minions stuck around with us. And, hey, through our major technical difficulties, you know, the thing about it is, Cliff, it's like hitting a wall. You're going along at fast speed, and then all of a sudden you hit the wall, and you just gotta stop and regroup. Oh, it goes bad. It goes bad real fast.
Well, it happens, man. Again, you know, that's part of radio, TV. I mean, you see it all the time happen. So, you know, it's just frustrating, but you just keep rolling on, just like crashing into a wall, as you say.
Just keep rolling off. Well, Jimmy Johnson out of Daytona makes the sweep. And, you know, we talk a lot about Jimmy Johnson, and maybe he's our favorite driver that we'd love to hate. So, what are your thoughts?
I got to tell you, man, you know, we discussed this on the show this week. Jimmy Johnson for the dominating, you know, force in that. A couple things stick out in that race. Number one, you know, for a race that's supposed to have a lot of restrictor plates, and they talk about downforce and wind and all that, let's take a look at Jimmy Johnson being able to dominate like that. You know, in the Gen 6 car, granted, you know, they figured out a way to make it go faster and do some different things. But, you know, and it kind of proves it this week, because you can tell NASCAR is looking a little closer at Jimmy Johnson's team, as, you know, we'll get into a little bit later, but, you know, he had his qualifying time. Disqualified, so to speak. So, you know, there's just something going on there, creative engineering, as Kenny calls it. You know, they've really been snapping down on people. They really need to take a look at that. And Jimmy Johnson is a good driver. Jack Kanellis definitely knows how to build a race car. No doubt about that. You know, that just amazed me how that was. And then you take a look. Let's look at Kyle Busch. You know, he had some early damage early. They put duct tape on it. Talk about how much downforce of the wind and all that makes your car go faster, kind of make it raise a lot of flags and a lot of questions for me, and how much truth there really is for Kyle Busch to be running up front like he was for the second half of the race with a bunch of duct, you know, 200 mile an hour duct tape on the front of it. Something's going on with NASCAR, and I think things are starting to leak out, and we're starting to see things that NASCAR's been trying to hide from the public for a while.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you did this, and I brought that up because I certainly wanted to give you time to unleash your fury, if you will. Ryan Newman basically fired by Tony Stewart. Well, for all intents and purposes, we'll use that terminology. Maybe that's not the correct way to do it. But right now, Ryan Newman doesn't know where he's going, and I think a lot of this has to do with it's bringing Budweiser back to the track there, and I don't know, there's just so much going on, and then he'd rather hang on to Danica as opposed to Ryan Newman. I know you have some strong thoughts and opinions on this, so please enlighten us, if you will, sir.
Well, first of all, number one, I don't know why the heck you guys are all surprised. You know, this has been a move since Harvick decided he was leaving RCR. Everybody knew he was going to Stewart House, and also knew that Ryan Newman was on the last year of his contract. Ryan Newman has three wins in, what, 4 years with him, 5 years? You know, Ryan Newman is not the driver that he once was, and part of that, I think, is the team. And I mean, let's face it, you and I both know, here's the bottom line. kept Danica because Danica has millions and millions of dollars coming in from GoDaddy. What does Ryan Newman have? Ryan Newman has, you know, Wix sometimes, and then he has, Quicken Loans is one of his major sponsors. And it's not a surprise to me. I don't know why everybody's freaking out about it. He's already made offers from Penske. Roush has talked to him. RCR has even talked to Ryan Newman. Ryan Newman will get a ride, but Ryan Newman is not the driver that he once was. It does not come as a surprise. Another cool thing is, Harvick's jumping in the number four car. I'm glad to see the number four back. Number four has a lot of history in NASCAR, so he'll be bringing Budweiser. It was a no-brainer for Budweiser to come over. There's two reasons for that. Number one, if you look at RCR, we all know that the Dillon boys are going to be the future of that. And if they bring back number three, we all know that Goodrich is going to be on the front of that car. It's a no-brainer. But, yes, Ryan Newman, a lot of people think he got screwed out of the deal, but the bottom line is it was a great business decision, and I know it really played on Tony Stewart's mind because they are good friends. They're both from Indiana. I hate to see that happen to an Indiana guy, but you know what? You got to go where the money's at. Budweiser's going to bring in millions of dollars. Trust me, they're spending a lot more money than Quicken Loans, boys.
Right, absolutely. And don't let Roger Curtis hear you say that. No.
Well, on a race car, let's put it that way.
Yeah, obviously Ryan Newman to leave Stuart Haas Racing. And Ryan Newman will bid farewell. And the thing about it is Tony and Ryan are pretty good friends. And you would think that they're able to keep that going. I think we do have another caller for 260. Maybe it's your buddy Kenny. Hi, who's this?
Well, this is me. Who are you?
Of course. You know what? The thing is, Kenny, is that my board doesn't tell me, doesn't have caller ID. It just tells me that I have a caller from 260. And so I kind of
figured. That's okay. I'm calling from work and I'm screwing off anyway, so I don't really want you to know who I am.
Well, I'll tell you what, this absolutely has been a crazy show, that's for sure.
Yeah, have you decided that Skype stinks today?
Oh, my God, buddy. You have no idea how much at this point I am anti-Skype. But that's okay. You know what? One thing that we had before Skype ever came around was just the good old-fashioned phone lines. Unfortunately, it stations the quality is not the way that it normally is, and especially with Indiana Talks and that sort of stuff. So there might be the possibility that this show will not be heard from Indiana Talks today because I don't know that I'm going to send it to them.
Oh, I don't blame you. Hey, I got 5 minutes. What are we lying about today? I'm going to put my two cents worth in.
What we're talking about actually is the whole Ryan Newman and Tony Stewart debacle. And basically, in my opinion, Tony Stewart said, "You're my friend and all. I'll drink a beer with you, but you ain't a part of this team anymore." What's really in my mind why I think Tony's given Ryan the shaft. Ryan helped Tony get started as a team owner. They joined forces together to make a team, and now that Tony has elevated to a different level, sorry, kid, kill me, you're bothering me.
Well, two things come into play. We got to remember that sports is what have you done for me lately. You know, I mean, Wilt Chamberlain scored a hell of a lot of points, but when he got older, they didn't want him anymore, you know. And then money. Unfortunately, our game always revolves right back to the same old thing, and they had trouble getting sponsorship for that car last year. And here comes Kevin Harvick. Here comes at least a big-buck sponsor for 20 races. Harvick's mad at RCR. It's kind of an interesting fit. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. And Newman's a good enough driver. He'll land somewhere. He may end up landing in the Nationwide Series for a while, but he won't be out of a ride all that long. But it all boils down to, I think they're going to call you later today. They're going to call theballast.com and ask for about $20 million so they can put that car on the racetrack all year long next year for an RCR and put Ryan Newman in it.
Hey, I'm all for it.
Yeah, stroke him a check. Who cares if it's any good or not? Just hand him a check and get the PR, huh?
Oh, goodness.
Well, hey guys.
I honestly think that we are really back in operating the way that we should be now. Do I sound better to the world now?
Well, yes, you do.
the best that you can do,
normal,
right?
You sound normal. Let's say that.
Well, I'm gonna keep the old fashioned standby mode right here. My standby pistol here on the side here, so that if things go wrong, I'm going old fashioned again. I'm leery. I'm not touching anything. I just know it's working now. maybe
hey, Cliff,
I need to fire my crew chief.
Cliff, is he giving us a chance to brag about our show this week yet?
No, we haven't got a chance to brag about Milka Duno yet.
Yeah. You ever talk to Milka Duno? She's a great interview.
Talk to me about what's going on at Radio Speed Talk this week.
Well, half our show was a wonderful interview with Milka Duno, you know, the Venezuelan who, when you start digging into what she's done an awful lot, both in and out of racing and stuff. Very, very interesting interview. Be on your toes. She's got a kind of a heavy accent, but it was fun to do that. And then, of course, we talk about cheaters. And what else we talk about, Cliff? I forget.
Well, it was mostly cheaters.
Oh, no wonder I was so fired up about the subject.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
Certainly, it's an interview that I would I'm looking forward to hearing. And we're going to air the show tomorrow afternoon right here on the Balance Radio Network. So also, Kenny, I wanted to talk about something. We're going to have to get to this while we still got time to get to it. I wanted to talk with you, and I'm glad you called in. I really am, and I know you're busy. But, you know, the thing about it is we talk a lot on this show about, you know, the Ryan Newmans, the Tony Stewarts, you know, the James Hinchcliffes, and the big name. But a lot of times we don't have time to talk about the local drivers. And here recently, just the other day, a local driver was killed in Fort Wayne, and not on the racetrack, unfortunately, an automobile accident that he was involved with. And I know that you knew the Miller team and Blaine Miller and all was going on. What I want to do is get your thoughts, and if you could – since you knew this guy, we've got the official press release here, which I could read, but I think it's a much more personal level if it comes from you, Kenny. So if you could talk with us a little bit about the accident involving Blaine Miller.
Well, I'm not going to talk about the accident much, but I'm going to talk about Blaine, because Blaine was one of those guys that if you took a good look at him, you'd go, huh? But he was one of these, I don't know how to use the term, evil genius, but he was one of these, he dressed every day, jeans, T-shirt, maybe overhauls and stuff, look at you, and if you walked up to him at a racetrack, you'd think, oh my gosh, this guy must be the tire changer, or the guy who puts gas in the car, or maybe he snuck into place and stuff. But he was nothing short of a genius when it comes to getting some of these cars running well and stuff. But 2 or 3 years ago, he had a whole fleet of front-wheel drive cars that nobody could touch because he figured out how to make them run really, really well by modifying the chip, and nobody else had that figured out yet. So, of course, everybody's screaming, cheater! Well, no, he outsmarted them all. He's the smoky eunuch for that year around here when nobody could catch him, and that's when his grandson, Jeff, who was also killed in the accident, started driving for him, so he immediately went out front. And it wasn't just bare field. He tore him up at Winchester, he tore him up at Angola, he tore him up at Anderson, he tore him up anywhere they went. And they had a fleet of cars, and at one time it was driver of the week. I put Cliff and my names in the hat, but they never got to us to drive those things. But old guys that hadn't been driving for 5 or 6 or 7 years would jump in one of them just to go have some fun and have a blast. And the cars were the quickest ones out there. And it was all because Blaine and his creative, ingenuitive, figured out how to make them turn left, figured out how to make them go really, really well down the straightaways. And they just tore everybody up. And he did that over the years all the time. And back in the 80s when he got hot and heavy in it, he always had good competitive cars. He's had really big names drive for him. I think I saw where – I've forgotten about Charlie Glotz back. I know Steve Chrisman's driving his late model this year, and Steve's a former NASCAR driver. So Blaine has been around a long time, well-respected. Like I say, you go to the pits and you see him and you go, oh, my gosh, look at who's that? But once you figured out who he was, you'd get it. And it was kind of fun. Now, his grandson, my heart really breaks for him because he was a really nice kid. I've interviewed him two or three times, even on the track down at Winchester. He was well-spoken, polite, turning into a good little driver. Grandpa had him going the right way you should. Start in the lower classes and learn. Learn how to build the cars, learn what makes them turn left, learn what makes them go, and then slowly bring him up in the world. And he would have been a hell of a driver in his day, probably both owner, engineer, mechanic, and driver if he would have stuck with it and stuff. So he was on the local level, he was one of those shining stars that have been dimmed way, way, way too early. And, we're all bummed about that.
Well, absolutely, and I know, Kenny, I appreciate you giving us the insight on that. Kenny, you're in a rare position to be able to get to know a lot of these drivers before they become the drivers that we know, and certainly that's a testament to your great character, Mr. Kenny Barr. So thanks for helping us out with that. You know, hey, I'm not beyond giving kudos to you, Mr. Kenny Barr, and Cliff Tanner.
You know why I'm in that position? Because of the guy on the other line over there, because Cliff Tanner's given me the opportunity to screw around on his radio show and be a co-host, which has opened doors for me as far as announcing at racetracks and stuff, and it all really boils back down to Speed Talk and the brainchild of Cliff and Pete and who's the other guy who's with you guys? Cliff, I forget.
What's that?
The guy that you guys had dinner with and had this idea going when you started Speed Talk.
Oh, Ken Allen?
Yeah, and Ken Allen. Those three guys.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for those three guys coming up with this idea and doing it, I wouldn't have the opportunity I had. So I appreciate those guys more than I ever say. But it's pretty cool to have that insight, and it's their fault, not mine. So
I feel like
going to blame you for all that. Come on now.
I feel like I'm on a Volkswagen commercial where they're on this test drive. Oh, I'm going to dream about that steak. Guys, can we go back to the lot now?
hey, Tom. Tom.
Yes.
I'm sitting in a Chevrolet dealership. Don't ever say the word Volkswagen to me again. Ever.
All
and
right.
If you say Hyundai or Kia, I'm driving down to Indian and we'll poke you right square in the nose.
American car all the way.
That's right, brother. I bleed red, white, and blue. Hey, I got to go. I'm really trying to run a business. Thanks for putting up with me. Talk to you later, Cliff.
See you, buddy. Thanks, man.
See you.
Kenny Barr, the partner in crime on Radio and Speed Talk. Always good to have him on board with us. And he always calls in as if I know who he is there, Cliff.
Well, actually, you would think you would know the numbers by now, but, you know, I know how the queue works, so, I guess maybe it's his ego.
Well, let's get back on track. Obviously, a bumpy start for our show, we're still on the lead lap here. We haven't been lapped too many times. We got our show duct taped back together, and we are ready to go. Ready to go. Well, you know, I want to just go back because I know we really got off track with IndyCar, and I want to just because, you know, everything's back to normal now. Everything's working the way that it should be. I wanted to just kind of go back to Pocono and then revisit the Toronto race, if you will, real quick, Kenny. When we look at the Pocono race, and we look at Justin Wilson, for example, Ed Carpenter, all of those drivers are young drivers who are starting to make a name. And obviously Hinchcliffe has built his way up there. But Justin Wilson's been around for a while. And you know, one, if we could give him a nickname on the Balance Show, would be Mr. Consistency. And he just continues to turn in even-keel performances on oval with a seventh place at Pocono, with twin races at Toronto upcoming. Wilson could be a pair of victories away from returning to a championship contention, and Justin Wilson really is Mr. Consistency.
Well, most definitely. And again, you know, it all boils down to getting in a good car, getting in with a crew chief,
and get that team chemistry going. I mean, he's got talent. There's no doubt about it. And we know he can win a championship. And if he keeps going up, gets himself top 10 the next few races, he'll be right there. He's a hop, skip, and a jump, getting pretty dominant in some of those races.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we look at today's this weekend's race with IndyCar up at Toronto, and it's a street course. And you know, we call them road courses, street courses, what have you. And what when we've talked about this before, but when you look at a road course or a street course, for example, like Toronto, or if you look at some of the others that they ran, I think these street courses require such a large amount of skill that it really does separate the men from the boys, and Toronto really could shake up the title hunt.
Well, most definitely, and you know, we've talked about this before. It's the same thing in NASCAR when you get on a road course. You know, there's certain guys that shine on that, and there's certain guys that don't. And, you know, this could be an opportunity for Will Power to get back on top, because he's pretty good at that. I think Kester Nevins is pretty good. Frank Keating's usually pretty good on him. And Joseph Newgarden, you got to watch out for him, man, because let's take a look at what happened with him and Soto a few races, or Sotville, excuse me. So, you know, guys like that could end up, he looks like he's getting more and more comfortable with the road course. And Hinchcliffe is one of those guys that I think is starting to become dominant in the road course. So, yeah, you're definitely right. There could be a huge points shakeup coming up this week.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. Now, let's talk about, as we get geared up, for the Brickyard here in Indianapolis, Jimmie Johnson, he fails inspection, will draw back in the field at New Hampshire. We see this a lot here recently, and maybe it's just because we're just seeing it a lot, but it seems like you have a driver like Jimmie Johnson do well the week before, go to a completely different track, do their race setup, and something happens in inspection that they fail and it hurts their field position. What do we attribute to that?
Well, a big part of it is NASCAR's getting smarter. You know, or maybe not smarter. They're checking things a lot closer. You know, the Gen 6 car, we're in 20 races into it now, or close to it. They're getting really strict with it, and guys are still playing around with packages and doing all that. I mean, well, let's take a look at Daytona. 31 cars had their the roof flaps or something was confiscated because they were checking them out. So, you know, a little bit of playing. Well, not only that, but there was a big public outcry that how could Jimmie Johnson be so dominant in a race that nobody should be dominant in. And, you know, I think they made him take a little bit closer look at it. And let's face it, you know, Jack announced a few years ago couldn't even be his crew chief at the Daytona 500 because, you know, some of the things he's got caught with. You know, everybody tries to push it to the limit. There's nothing wrong with that. But my thing is when it comes to punishment and things like that, and we're seeing a lot of inconsistencies. I mean, let's take a look at what happened, you know, with Penske. You know, they get caught doing something, he gets a huge penalty. Kibbs gets caught doing something really, they're out of control. They get a huge penalty, and that gets retracted. And then you come to the Hendrick boys, they get in trouble, nothing happens. Maybe a fine, maybe probation, and that's it. And I think NASCAR is starting to realize that people are getting a little tired of the inconsistency there, and they're just cracking down. That's the bottom line.
Right, absolutely. Well, you know, we got just a few minutes left here. I wanted to talk just a little bit about the NHRA, and if you want to just bring us up to speed on that, sir, if there's anything that you want to talk about with the NHRA. I know we didn't have as much time for it as we wanted to because of our issues earlier in the show, so everything is pushed back. But the NHRA 2013 Mellow Yellow Series obviously will be here in Indianapolis for the U.S. Nationals. Very exciting time to see them, obviously, to see the forces and to see all of the major NHRA drivers here in town. But let's catch up with them a little bit and talk with us a little bit about what's going on in the NHRA.
Well, I mean, you know, the Harley Davidsons, when you talk about Pro Stock Motorcycle, finally made a good show the last couple of weeks or couple of races, so they're coming up. But the one I want to talk about the most is John Force. and my thoughts at the beginning of the year, and I talked to you and everybody else about it, is I felt that, you know, I think he's ready to retire. And maybe Ashley may be coming back, I don't know. But I'm kind of seeing that. And let's take a look at the guy. I mean, he's been the number one qualifier every race since Father's Day when he won. He hasn't won them, but he's made it to the semifinals, except for last week, not doing so well. And boom, he's right up there in the championship points. I could see him really pushing to try to get that. And again, keep in mind, he's got Mike Neff, one of the best crew chiefs around. They're finally starting to fire on all cylinders. Don't be surprised if you don't see number 16. And look out for the Alabushi guys coming up in the top fuel. They're starting to make some pretty good runs there as well. But, you know, Schumacher's still pretty dominant there. Tony Schumacher's still up there. Spencer Massey and Antoine Brown are struggling a little bit. Doug Collette's making some noise up there. We could see a real good finish in almost every class this year. It'll be interesting.
Hello? Are you there, Cliff?
I am now. Yes, been here.
You know, I'll just go out there and man up on that one. That was one of those situations that I always do. I always forget to turn the mic back on. While you were talking, I turned my mic off, you know, so you couldn't hear me typing and all that good stuff. Looking forward to having the NHRA at the U.S. Nationals back at the Lucas Oil Raceway. Hopefully we can get together and have a show out there that weekend. Real quickly, Cliff, where can people find your work, your masterpieces, your show, or ask you out for a date?
Well, I tell you what, you go to radiospeedtalk.com, talk to us there, read blogs, listen to the shows, listen to the interviews, find out what's happening, facebook.com/radiospeedtalk. I'm on Twitter at radiospeedtalk, too. Give us a shout, man. Tell us what's happening.
All right, Mr. Cliff Tenner, I know you're headed to Indianapolis for some personal reasons, and I hope you have a safe trip and enjoy your time here with your family here in Indianapolis, and we'll catch up with you next week. And, sir, I do apologize about our technical difficulties earlier in the show.
Hey, man, don't worry about it, dude. It happens. It happens to us sometimes. That's just the way life goes. You know, if technology was perfect, we'd be in heaven right now, but keep in mind it's people that make that kind of stuff happen. So,
absolutely. All right, Cliff Tenner, we'll catch up with you next week, sir, and you have yourself a good week.
All right, buddy. You too. Thanks, man.
All right. Cliff Tenner of Radio Speed Talk, always good to have him on, and good to have Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk joining us as well. Our thoughts and prayers obviously go out to the Blaine Miller family who lost his life tragically this week in a car accident in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Certainly our thoughts and prayers are with that family. Guys, we're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to be talking to, well, of course, it's that time week, I guess, if you will. We're going to be talking with Meet Your Makers. Boy, I got to shake this off, guys. We'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Head in the game. My name is Turbo. I just wanted to go a little faster.
Yes! 17 minutes! That's a new record!
Let's go, people! Pick it up!
Put all that racing nonsense behind you and start living your life!
I have a life?
I wish I was fast.
waiting. I'll never go it slow again.
This must be my lucky day.
A little far from home, aren't you? Garden snail.
You clearly got the skills to pay the bills. If snails had to pay bills, that is. I'm Whiplash. This is my crew.
I'm fast, like a shadow.
But shadows, they're not inherently fast.
What shadow?
I can still see you.
With my brains and your speed, we should be destined for greatness.
The Indy 500.
This is ridiculous.
A snail cannot race in a competition meant for cars.
Wow. Aren't you just a little ray of sunshine? All of these people, they believe in me.
Those guys are crazy.
Those guys are awesome.
I'm moving so fast, the whole world's going in slow motion, baby.
Whoa. If you think that's something, check this out.
Hey, you a robot?
Are you radioactive, homie?
Ooh, that's a new one.
Okay, it's time to slow down here on The Balance and meet your makers. Tom talks with Brad and Chris from Tecure, a food anthology. You can visit them on the web at tecurefood.com to find out more about them and this worthy cause. Now here's your host, Tom Marquis.
All right, my minions, welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom Marquis, President. Hey, well, we do this every Saturday morning. We catch up with our friends Brad and Chris, who are traveling the road for Tecure Food on Meet Your Makers, and we catch up with them and what they're doing. So without further ado, Mr. Brad or Chris, how are you doing, sir?
Good morning, Tom. We are well. Lovely morning here in Napa Valley. Bright and early morning. Okay. Can you hear us?
It is pretty early for you. Isn't it like 7 a.m. in the morning for you there?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Something like that.
Sun's just beginning to rise. No, but for real, how are you, Tom?
I'm good. You know, I understand the whole time difference thing. You know, earlier this week, I had to return a call out in Phoenix. I got in the voicemail, and I got in the office, and the voicemail was there. I get in about 8 o'clock. I didn't think anything about it, and I left a voicemail, and I caught up with him later in the day, and he goes, "Sorry I didn't return your call, but you left me a voicemail at 5:30 in the morning." So, you know.
Way to wake him up.
Hey, apparently I didn't wake him up. Apparently the phone was off and he didn't even hear it ring. So it's all good. But yeah, okay. The thing about it is the country just needs to be one time zone. Your daylight times might be different. It might be dark earlier or later, but at least everybody be on the same time, right?
You know,
it could be like it could be like Alaska. Some parts of Alaska, it's only daylight 1 hour a day, and then vice versa, it's only dark 1 hour a day. So you talk about messing up your schedule.
Yeah,
should have done. You guys should have drove on up there to Alaska.
Next time, Tom. Next time.
I'll plan your agenda next time. All right. All right. Brad, Chris, out in Napa Valley, obviously having a great time. Now, talk with us. I know last week you guys were out there in the Seattle area. Talk with us a little bit about that. I know that you guys came across a food forest. With Glenn there in Seattle, which is an urban farming community. So talk with me a little bit about that.
So the Beacon Food Forest in Seattle is an urban food forest, and the food forest is it runs off of a permaculture paradigm, which is a kind of a style of gardening or farming in which you let the plants kind of run the show and kind of be synergistic. So it actually is built like you would find a woodland ecosystem. It's got grasses, it's got some small perennials, it's got some shrubbery, some small trees, some larger trees. But with the food forest, they actually made it really interesting in that every plant has it's edible, and so it can be turned into a food, or it has a craft purpose, such as a basket weaving or something similar to that. And so they actually made this entire forest ecosystem useful, And it's an entirely volunteer-run project. So the only people working on it right now are those that want to work on it, but they still have easily, they said that, you know, they have little socials, and they said that they have 100 people coming out to these socials and putting in their time over the course of various days or weeks or whatever they really can help. And it's a really cool project to see down there in the heart of Seattle.
Yeah, and it's not, we say food forest, but as of now, it's still basically an empty plot of land. There has been some initial gardening and planting work going on with the volunteers that they have rounded up, and everybody is really excited about the project, and so is the city. But as of now, I mean, we're still going to see 2 or 3 years before we see any massive, really obvious changes to the kind of the food shed there in that community. But what they're doing has been a model for a lot of other people interested in rebuilding kind of marginal, wasted urban space and trying to recreate it and turn it into something not only valuable to eat, but valuable for the community, which they can feel proud of and which they can gather around. So it's a really awesome idea and a really great way to utilize space in your cities that is otherwise abandoned or ugly or unsightly.
One of the things I like about what you guys are doing as you travel around the country, which is one of the reasons why I decided that it would be a good match for you guys to be on our show, is the stories I hear you talk about as you travel across the country. Yeah, we have fun talking about your adventures and following you along from the fun side of it. But from the serious side, this is a business trip for you guys. And I know we have fun with you guys about being on a road trip, but this is a business trip for you guys. And you really have educated me, myself, a lot over the past month and a half of things I've never heard of, and but that doesn't take much. My box is pretty limited, so I'll be the first guy to admit that I'm your red, white, and blue American conservative guy who probably needs to have his eyes opened up a little bit. But nonetheless, really a lot of good stuff that you guys are doing. And more than you guys, there's a whole external community out there that really cares about getting, back to the roots of growing your own food and being self-sufficient. And I love the way that you guys have been able to connect with these communities and really bring a theater of mind, if you will, of talking with us about where you've been and what you've been doing it. And, of course, this next stop that you guys made there in Portland was an old-school tortilla maker there in Portland. So talk with me about that.
Yeah, Tom, I really appreciate you commenting on the importance of some of the things that we're doing and some of the people we're speaking with, because we absolutely agree that's one of the reasons why we set off on this trip, was to meet these people and learn about all the exciting, unique, but really important and rewarding things that people are doing all across the country to help change the way that we eat. And it's been really a lot of fun, but you're right. There's some significance to what people are doing, and we're just hoping to learn about it and be able to share it with the people that follow us. Nixtamal, Three Sisters Nixtamal in Portland, Oregon. So Portland, Oregon is a really awesome town in general. It is one of the foodie capitals of the country, really young, really interesting, really alternative kind of lifestyle there. It was actually parodied pretty heavily in a show called Portlandia. I don't know if you watch that sort of television, Tom, but it's pretty funny. And so if you want to get a general sense of what Portland is like, you can check out Portlandia. It's a fun show. But Three Sisters Nixtamal. Nixtamal refers to an old-school process, very traditional Mexican process, and very traditional in the Americas process, by which corn is kind of broken down and allow some of its nutrients to come out, dried hard corn, by adding lime to it and letting it soak. So you do that, and lime the mineral, not lime the fruit. And so you do that overnight. You allow the corn to soak and kind of break down a little bit, and then you mill it very traditionally between two stones, rotating stones, and then you press it out into a tortilla size and put it through this little machine that will just cook it very lightly on each side. But so it's a very traditional way to make tortillas, and almost nobody in the United States is doing it, maybe three, maybe four. And even people in Mexico less and less are doing it as, you know, as Mexico industrializes and it becomes that much easier to buy it from the store up the street. And the people that are doing it with dried mazarin powder, which is, it's a similar facsimile, but it's not the same thing. And it just doesn't have nearly as much flavor. And so it was pretty awesome to have a tortilla right off the press. I got to admit, it's pretty much a world apart.
Well, absolutely. I can only imagine how good that tastes. But, you know, I would load it up with the fajitas and the guacamole and all the junk. So maybe I'd lose the taste of the actual tortilla. Breakfast burrito, whatever. There's so many uses for them. So many uses for them. Now we're talking my language. You guys, I believe it was still there in Portland, Olympic Provisions Butcher, and there's a salami there. Also, you guys were introduced to a new herbal tea or root tea that may or may not have some intoxicating attributes to it.
Yeah, so we'll start with kava, Tom. Kava is indigenous to basically Hawaii and some of those kind of Indonesian, Polynesian islands. It's related to the pepper, the black pepper plant, and I was first introduced to it back in my undergrad, but it was really unique to see a kava bar. It's the first I've ever seen. It might be the only one in the continental United States, and quite likely, if it's not in Portland, then I doubt it's in. It's in Portland, but I doubt it's anywhere else. But it has kava has a unique ability. It has a set of compounds in it called kava lactones, which are both focus enhancing agents. Kind of like you would think of your vitamin B's, I guess, some of those enhanced focus. And it also is very relaxing, so it's a muscle relaxant as well. So it's this really, really unique kind of euphoric feeling that just kind of relaxes you and stabilizes your body and mind. But it tastes like dirt.
Literally, it's like dirt.
Pretty much like drinking muddy water. Not for everyone.
When I hear you guys talk about this tea, I'm reminded of that trippy scene, if you will, from Young Guns. I don't know if you guys ever saw that movie. It's the movie about a band of outlaws led by Billy the Kid. But while they're hiding out from a posse that's coming after them, they consume a drink that's prepared by their Native American companion, and they go on a very on a journey of their own. We'll put it that way. Have you guys seen that movie?
I haven't seen it, but not quite that much of an experience. It does numb your mouth.
Yeah, literally, you it's like going to the for about a couple of minutes. It's really unique, and I can't stress enough, it really does taste like dirt, and looks like dirt, and like muddy water.
It's very earthy.
But it was fun. It was a unique experience, and if nothing else, this excellent voyage that we're on is to have new and unique experiences.
Sure, and absolutely, and then, like I said, that's one of the things that I enjoy about you guys and what you're able to do is really bring that experience to myself and to our listeners as well. So talk with me a little bit about what else you guys have been doing out there in Portland and in on your travels this week. And I know you guys enjoyed some smoked salmon and. I guess there's a story about a fatted calf. So talk with me a little bit about your other journeys.
Yeah, Tom. So actually we've been very lucky in the last 3 or 4 days, I guess maybe up to a week, that we've seen some really awesome butcher/saloonists, like charcuterie makers, traditional ways to preserve and to cure meat. This new style, this new renaissance of butcher/saloonist in America is really awesome to see. As you know, we've talked about it. We've seen a couple thus far, one in Madison, one in Indianapolis.
the Smoking Goose there. But we saw Olympic Provisions in Portland, and more recently we've made our way here to Napa Valley. And yesterday morning we went to Fatted Calf. And so the two models are actually fairly distinct, where Elias out of Portland has a 4,500-square-foot operation where he brings in whole animals, breaks them down into their component parts, and makes various cured meats with them. That's essentially the same thing that Taylor is doing at the Fatted Calf. However, one is intended for simply their own retail stores, meaning two, and a couple of farmers markets. That's the one here in Napa. Whereas Elias has dreams to be quite a bit larger and wants to be able to stock places like Whole Foods more or less throughout the country, while still retaining this artisanal mind, while still focusing on quality. And so I'm interested to see how that plays out whenever they do expand, which is very, very soon. They're going to an operation that's 10 times the size, so 40,000 square foot facility. And so, yeah, I'm interested to see how he's able to expand and maintain that quality as the number one ingredient to his food. But it was great to see those two side by side, and of course to taste the two charcuterie plates side by side, which were both phenomenal in their own way. But it was really awesome to get the opportunity to meet those two fine gentlemen.
Now, I know one of your missions, if you will, as part of your trip, you guys are definitely trying to explore the local breweries and some of the brew makers, which obviously we love and our minions love. So with your travels with To Cure Food so far to date, what's the best brew, homemade brew, that you guys have come across?
Oh, that's a hard one, Tom.
Stumped you this morning, man.
Yeah.
We can go back to that question if you want.
No, I would say, I mean, we've seen a close to about a half a dozen breweries so far on this trip. As much as I love them and it's a focus and interest of mine, we're trying not to be too brew heavy. But that said, ones that stand out, Wicked Weed and Full Steam back in Asheville and Durham, North Carolina, of all places, down in the southeast, are still very high up on my list. Full Steam is doing some incredible things for the community again. We chatted about them doing a foraging series and actually using some of the persimmons, mulberries, pawpaws, things like that for their beers that their patrons bring in. And Wicked Weed is just killing it with their hop-forward beers and some of their Belgian offerings. And the brothers there, Walt and Luke, have incredible incredible vision and great skill in brewing. I mean, it's not really beer, but Alpenfire Cider that we talked about last week, Bear up there and Nancy are killing it in the cider realm as well. But I'm really looking forward to going down into San Diego and checking out some of the brew scene down there. We're about to hit San Francisco, and I'm sure we'll have our fair share of beer in those two sunny cities, as they are hotbeds of brewing production. So pretty stoked about the upcoming week or so. And, of course, then we have Colorado coming after San Diego, and, Colorado is just – that's where it all started.
And
absolutely. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, yeah, it wasn't quite beer yet, but we did get a chance to see the Rogue Hop Yard this past week, a couple days ago, actually, which Rogue is a really large but
sure.
Very good craft brewery, and they have their own hop yard for the hops that they use in their beer. And so it was a good chance to see the agricultural side of beer, because beer is, in the end, an agricultural product. And so it was good to see all these flavor-enhancing hops that is the United States and Americans are really well known for, especially on the West Coast, for their craft beers, and to see how they're produced. It was my first experience with hops, and they're pretty interesting little.
You can't have a good beer without hops, that's for sure. Well, today you guys are going to be doing a wine tasting this afternoon. And tomorrow, Rancho Gordo and a Heritage Bean Guy. So what do you guys got coming up this weekend, and where will we find you guys next week when we catch up with you?
Yeah, so we had the wine tasting yesterday, actually. It was delightful, and
really great to experience that here in Napa. And then tomorrow, or actually today, we'll be spending the afternoon with Steve Sando from Rancho Gordo, who is doing Heritage Beans. And he was actually encouraged, we were encouraged to see him from the Nixtamal folks in Portland, although I'd heard of him before. And so basically, like we had chatted about people in the Southeast reseeding the agrarian economy with heirloom wheat and corn and rice, he's doing the same thing with beans, both domestically and in Mexico, to encourage people to grow these kind of somewhat lost varietals but have a ton of flavor and are just really, really beautiful. So we're going to speak with Steve about that today. Tomorrow we're going to see another winery, another small, really awesome one called Lava Vine tomorrow afternoon. On Monday, we're hoping to see Cultured Organic, which is an awesome fermented foods and pickle shop, and then Dandelion Chocolate, which we spoke about Mass Brothers a little while back, probably in our first conversation, out of Brooklyn. So they're doing Bean to Bar. This is a similar model that Dandelion's doing, but they're doing it here on the West Coast. So we're interested to see how they compare. A couple other things upcoming. Poca Dolce, another chocolate maker, doing awesome stuff. Wyrock Farm, which is a 60-animal sheep farm, creamery and cheesemaker, really young folks, really awesome. And then Strauss Family Creamery, which will be a good contrast with what Wyrock's doing, as they're quite a bit larger, but they're kind of the pioneers and forerunners of the organic dairy movement in the United States. So it'll be good to juxtapose those side by side.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to following you throughout the week. Obviously, our listeners can find your work and really follow you virtually on 2curefood.com. Where can people follow you and donate money? Anything else that you'd like to say before we let you guys go today?
If you are interested in donating, you can find us on www.2curefood.com/support. We're always looking for some help. Old Blue is not the most graceful of vehicles and does tend to drink his gasoline quite quickly.
He likes his gasoline.
He does. But then we will be also releasing shortly the next leg of our trip. So if people are on the lookout, they'll see the dates, or the rough dates of where we're heading to next through sunny Florida. So be on the lookout for that.
Brad and Chris on the road with them with 2curefood. Guys, you know me. I'm always about connecting all the dots. As you guys were talking about the root tea, and it tastes like dirt, and I ask you about the Young Guns. What I'm going to do is I'm going to end this segment. Now, this is that scene from Young Guns that I was referring to. And then we're going to take a break, guys. When we get back, we're going to jump into some fantasy football. And we're going to jump into the fantasy football lineup. Guys, are you much of a fantasy football player at all? Or?
In my youth, Tom, I played some fantasy football, but I haven't played.
You know, I've been playing it for so many years. To give you an idea, when I first started playing it, we didn't play it with computers. We played it with paper. But it's really, really huge, and obviously one of the most popular things of this show, believe it or not. But that doesn't take much. Brad, Chris, please be careful out there on your travels, and we'll catch up with you next week. And, of course, we'll be following you online right here
Thanks,
on the Balance Radio Network. Thanks.
Butterflies. Yeah, it's just like a butterfly. Butterfly flies to a flower, stays with it. Doesn't know why, just feels it. Oh yeah. She's my flower. And I'm her.
mouth like a cannon, always shooting it off.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
여자, Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
He said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
Tired of hearing the same old racing shows?
Why listen to the same boring results with mundane robotic ticks?
Try Speed Talk. We're not your father's racing show.
We cover all racing with an edge.
Join the menage a trois of opinions, both crazy and legit.
Check us out at RadioSpeedTalk.com to balance and other local affiliates.
We cover national and local racing venues.
We include great interviews and occasionally throw in some history lessons.
That is Do You Know, Kenny.
Speed Talk, where entertainment is always a guarantee.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
It's about to be a lot of fun today.
The weather's been nice down here, huh?
Yeah, it has been. You know, it's
man, beautiful.
This is. You know, it was chilly last Sunday.
It was chillier last Sunday.
Absolutely. But it's been nice.
There ain't no 50-degree right here now.
Well, they get this place cold before the game, don't they?
It was cold.
It's 22 degrees out here. It's bleeding.
So much for no rain, huh?
Wait to start talking about football again right here on The Balance and Fantasy Football Huddle. That's right, one of our most popular segments we have every year. Now, it is time to talk some fantasy football, 917-889-8516. Let's talk about your team, your league. What do you got going on? And you can also be a part of The Balance, the Elite Balance Fantasy Football League. It is free, but we have a very limited amount of spaces open. So if you want to play fantasy football in the Balance Fantasy Football League, I need to hear from you ASAP so that we can get you set up and ready to go with that. So you can email me, tom@thebalanceonline.com. You can also just send me a tweet at TBalance or just go to our Facebook page and say, I want to be on your fantasy football team. And we'll get you all set up for the Balance Annual Fantasy Football League. And, of course, give you an opportunity to come on the Balance here and talk about your team and your players and some of your strategies during our Fantasy Football Huddle segment, which will begin every Saturday once the NFL season kicks off. And we'll probably even do it a little bit sooner than that in late August. So it's coming. You can feel it. You can taste it. Fantasy football is right around the corner, my minions. The blood is in the water. That is for sure. And you want to look at last year's lineup in your team. And, you know, a lot of you may have keeper leagues, which is fine. The one thing I will tell you about the balance is it's not a keeper league, just so that we can keep it fair with everybody. But certainly the more competitive, and I'm in several leagues, and I have some keeper leagues as well. And so what you want to do is look at your keepers and what have they done in the off season for you. Do you want to keep them? Did you designate them as a keeper? Of course, talk with your league commissioner and see what the rules are on keeping your players. But sometimes, you know, a player may have ended the season great, and something may have happened in the off season or whatever that had really, you know, took them off your fantasy radar. Let's use a perfect example, Aaron Hernandez. That's an extreme example. But if you have him and we're prepared to use him, obviously you're smart enough by now to scratch him off your draft sheet or off of your team, depending on how your league was set up. Well, let's talk about it. Let's talk about 2013 fantasy football. I love talking football. I love talking fantasy football. One of my favorite things to cover here on The Balance. 917-889-8516 is the number to get to me to talk with me about your fantasy football league, your fantasy football team. Let's get this conversation going. Let's talk a little bit about your strategy. Now, a lot of people ask me, because, you know, I am the foremost expert in fantasy football. Why? Because I know what I'm doing. So if you want to take my advice, great. If you don't, great. But what I'm going to tell you, if you don't, you're going to be screwed on draft day. No, you're really not. But there really is no, what I would say, an ironclad draft strategy. Now, what I would say if there is a rule on draft day, don't go into draft day and make a rookie mistake and draft a defense or a kicker in the first round. I would even say, unless it's just a really, really hot commodity, maybe you want to look at something like last year with Andrew Luck. If you have that type of a commodity, that might be the exception to the rule where you would go in and actually draft a quarterback in your first round, your first pick. Now, depending on whether or not you do a live draft or you do an auto pick, there's a lot of different type of draft styles out there. But what we're going to do is we're going to talk about how the Balance does their draft. And we have an excellent draft night, BW3s in Avon, and we'll do that again this year. And hopefully we can get all of our team owners. Certainly you can bring your girlfriends, family, kids, whatever, to draft night as well and have them be a part of it, because it's going to be consuming their life for a while. And they have to make that sacrifice. Some people just don't get fantasy football, do they? You know, I love Brad and Chris, great guys, really are, but I don't think they get it. I don't think they've wrapped their arms around the importance of fantasy football. I always say, if you don't like fantasy football, give me your man card. You're no man, or woman card for that matter. Hey, I tell you what, our producer, Michelle Jones, and we have another female that plays. They're just as good as the men. So believe me, girl power in fantasy football is real and dominant. I even know, and there's leagues at the office, I even know of leagues that are all female. So there you go. And they do, and a lot of times they do better than men. Now, their draft strategies is, oh, I like their uniform, or I've heard of him, or Or hey, I'm a Colts fan, so all my players are going to be Colts. No, I'm just giving the women a hard time. They're actually very men are conquerors, and we want to go out and conquer and win. Women are gatherers, and you know that goes back to the caveman days, and women like to gather all the information, all the stats, and I'm that way too. Maybe I got some woman in me, I don't know. But here's the thing: if you're going to draft, you want to look at doing one of two things on draft day. On the very first pick, you want to look at what does your team need the most? What does your team get the most score from? Most league as it is in the balance. And when I'm talking about kind of the advice to go, I'm kind of referring to the balanced fantasy football draft and how we do things. And we do a snake draft. For those of you that don't know what a snake draft is, we do a random lotto. I let the computer pick who is going to get the first round pick. And then if you have the last pick in the first round, you'll have the first pick in the second round. And then it literally just as snakes around. Of course, our producer always picks Eli Manning because he's so cute. So there you go. There's a strategy there for you. So. What I do is I look at what position is going to bring me the most points. Where do I need the most help at in points overall? And in most league, that position is going to be your running back position. Because in fantasy football, you gain points by yardage. Now, again, there's the wide receiver, and there is arguments that maybe you would pick up a wide receiver on the first round. I'm not necessarily opposed to that. That's a very effective strategy. A lot of people use that. They do a wide receiver, running back, and then maybe another wide receiver, and they kind of bounce that around and don't even get to their quarterbacks until the fourth round. Now, depending on where the draft ends up at, who's in the draft and who's available, a lot of times there's going to be plenty of quarterbacks left. Now, keep in mind, on most leagues, you can only have two quarterbacks. So there's going to be plenty of quarterbacks out there. And keep in mind, you never always have to draft your team that you're going to keep. I'm probably one of the most notorious guys of doing this. I'll draft a lot of players. And in the balance league, what we do is we give you a 5 or 10 day period to make your trades and stuff before we make anything official. So it's a free for all, and you could go in and trade and drop and do whatever you want to do. So I am a firm believer that what I would do is I actually draft a lot of players and then work up my trade schedule and put a lot of them on the block. Because you might pick up a mediocre quarterback, but you might have a lot of really good running backs that you could never play. So you might want to say, hey, I could get rid of some of these running backs and make a trade to somebody else in the league. So that's a strategy on how you get set up on your draft day. If you want to talk about your draft team fantasy football league, give me a call, 917-889-8516. I reached out to Axel and Sparky and some of our usual suspects on Fantasy Football Huddle. They all had other obligations today, which is cool. No worries. It's still preseason, so it's all good. So I'm driving this Fantasy Football Huddle ship by myself today, so certainly give me a call, 917-889-8516. Remember, if you want to be on the Fantasy Football League, it's important that you direct message me ASAP on Twitter at TBalance. That would probably be the best way to do it. Or certainly email me at tom@indieprosports.com or tom@thebalanceonline.com. Or give me a call here, 917-889-8516. We'll talk about your fantasy league and your fantasy team and what are you doing. And what are some of the strategies that you're looking at in your strategy? Here's the thing. At its very fundamental level, fantasy football is all about minimizing your risk and giving yourself the best odds to win. So what do I mean by that? It's simple. Really, when we're kids, when we play football as a kid, or baseball or basketball, whatever you play as a kid, the first thing you learn, or any job, you learn the fundamentals. And I tell you what, I'll probably get caught up in this mix. This preseason, there'll be millions of articles, tweets, podcasts, TV shows, magazines, radio segments like this one, which this should be the only source that you're going to, and Facebook and all of the other stuff. Certainly, you can go wherever you want for your information. And why would you go anywhere but El Presidente here, Fantasy Football Huddle? This is what we do. This is what we know. But everybody trying to top the other one with their stouts and scouting and sleepers and bust. And, there's some good information out there. I'm not going to lie. But, hey, some of it won't be good information. One thing you can be assured of, you'll get the best information from me. But either way, either which way, you get your information. There's a lot of it. There's tons of it. And as you sift through it, in fact, before you make any decision this year about whom you're going to draft, trade, pick up, start, bench, or waive, ask yourself these three questions. How risky is the move? Does it give me a better or worse chance to win? And what is most likely to happen? Now, that's where I am wanting your great tools. Because I am the great prognosticator. I will be able to tell you what is going to happen. And when that happens, during Fantasy Football Huddle, I will sit here and I will tell you, I told you so. If you did not listen to me, that is why you should be listening to me. I cannot predict the future. I've never claimed to. But neither can anyone else, so don't try. But what I can tell you, instead of stacking, I guess what I'm saying is, stack the odds in your favor. Put yourself in the best possible situation to succeed, and cross your fingers and toes and hope for the best. That's good advice for life as well. Hey, Uncle Tom's here to make that happen. Not only am I here to guide you through the sports, I'm here to guide you through life. And we may even be able to talk a little bit about, land war in Asia or, Egypt, whatever you want. Bottom line is, here at Fantasy Football Huddle, we're going to spend time making sure that you're ready to hit the gridiron. Again, a reminder, 917-889-8516 is the digits to get to me. Let's talk a little bit about the first thing you should know, that there is no magic bullet out there. There is no silver bullet. There is nothing out there. There's no magic potion on what we're discussing here. It's not about your only chance to win, but merely what gives you the best chance. And honestly, there's lots of ways to do that. Last year you could have drafted a kicker and a defense in the first two rounds and not drafted a running back until the fifth round and been just fine. Now, would that have been something I recommended to you? Heck no. Absolutely not. In fact, I'll be the first one to tell you to never, ever draft a defense in the first two rounds. And really, sometimes I don't even pick up a kicker in the draft. I might let it auto-pick or something like that. But yeah, I guess maybe if you would have done that last year, that would have done it. But nobody ever does it. It's nonsense. So don't do it. I'm not going to tell you to do it this year. But you look back, maybe that would have been the key. Obviously, you would look at the kicker Blair Walsh and the defense of the Bears, and if you grab Doug Martin in the fifth and Alfred Morris maybe up on waivers, we could have done a lot of things. And a lot of people thought, well, those were the magic bullets, but they turned out to be, but we didn't know that at the time. You also could have won last year if you went and got your quarterback in the first round. Again, not something I advocate, not something that I push. But man, you could have did well by going and snagging Andrew Luck, and especially if you have a keeper league. And it's certainly a Luck fan. He plays for the Colts here in our backyard. I'm a diehard Colts fan as a football fan. But here's the thing. I say going with the wide receiver, the running back would have worked out. Stay consistent. For example, a lot of people steered away from Adrian Peterson last year. See, that's just too risky of a pick. Great running back pick to do, but Adrian Peterson, be honest, had a heck of a season last year. Had a heck of a season. So, you know, my thoughts are let's just get back to the basics. Draft a running back in the first round, maybe a wide receiver. And maybe since we're talking about since what's most likely to happen, we're aiming for a minimum of 8 wins. When you're in most leagues, 8 to 9 wins going to get you in the playoffs. And so you want to look at how many running backs had at least 10 points. Now we use ESPN as our facilitator. A lot of people use Yahoo. A lot of people use NFL.com. So maybe the rankings are different a little bit differently. But like last year in 8 different games last season, when you look at consistency rankings, Adrian Foster, Adrian Peterson, 14, 13. Doug Martin had 12. Spiller had 12. Alfred Morris had 12. Marshawn Lynch had 11. Ray Rice, 11. Frank Gore, 11. And so that's just kind of how the list is. You can look at who's giving you the most points. 16 running backs, you know, really that's it. 16 running backs were good enough to be number one or number two running backs at least half the season, and many of them, Michael Turner, were touchdown dependent. I'm just saying. But the great prognosticator talked about, well, I can pull the tapes if you'd like. What about Dick Ballard? Well, we can get to a lot of those guys as well as the season goes on. But not surprisingly, there is a shortage of running backs that consistently score in double digits. If you look at the projections, ESPN projections, and that's what I'm going off of because that's what we use on the balance. If you look at the projections from last season, and or this season, or really anywhere else, the list is pretty similar. There is a shortage of something. There's just a shortage of good running backs out there. I just think that that's where we're at on that. So who do you pick? What running backs do you pick? Now, there is a lot of wide receivers out there. So there's a wide range of wide receivers. So maybe you want to look at some wide receivers. And then you got the quarterback list. Again, I'm going to throw quarterbacks in there like Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck, Tom Brady. I don't know that you can actually count Peyton Manning as being a number one draft pick anymore. Certainly, he proved himself after neck injury to go out to Denver, and we miss him here in Indianapolis, but certainly proved himself to be able to go out there and do well. But I wouldn't put him in a number one pick situation. So I wouldn't be picking up Peyton Manning in your first round, second round, third round. Maybe. There's going to be those greedy guys. Oh, I got to have Peyton Manning. Maybe it's a status thing with you. Maybe you got to have him just because you got to have him. But I would wait. I look for Peyton Manning to do well this year. But from a fantasy perspective, which he did well, he put up great numbers last year. I'm still worried about that one hit. And so, I don't know. And then you look at some other ones, Ben Roethlisberger, Tony Romo, certainly usual suspects, not people that I would go running after. RG3, I wasn't that impressed with his performance last year. A lot of people weren't. Matthew Stafford just signed a great big contract out there in Detroit, and you know you would think that maybe he would do well as well. And then, you know, here's the thing, steer clear away from the kickers. You know, I joked about it, but really, seriously, guys, I wouldn't even put a kicker on your radar. Save that pick for another running back or a wide receiver in the late rounds, maybe a good sleeper or something. I wouldn't even pick up a kicker in the draft. Maybe if you want to do an auto pick or something, then it just throws a kicker in there for you. But chances are you're going to get rid of him anyway. On a very, very rare occasion, is a kicker going to win you games? I mean, I'm sorry, they can win you games, but they're not going to win you fantasy titles. So, you know, who's going to have Steven Gadowski or Dan Bailey? You really don't. You really don't. Again, going back to the defenses, don't get any defenses. They can help you with some games, and certainly they're an intricate part, but I'm talking about people you want to look at in your first round. So let's put it all back together, okay? If you were to put your chart together today, some of the things you want to look at, what's going to score you the most points? Between a quarterback and a running back, maybe 17-13. You're going to have your backup running back and your secondary running backs. You're going to have two running backs that you're going to play depending on how your league is set up and play. I mean, you might have a running back, a wide receiver, quarterback, and then you have that flex position with the tight end, and then you throw in your defense and kicker. So basically, roughly, let's just put this together. Let's just say your quarterback scores you 17 points, your running back 13, your other running back 10, wide receiver 11, and maybe you have another wide receiver at 10. Then you have your flex, let's just say a tight end or a flex position. The flex positions are good. We do utilize that in one of my leagues. And flex positions are good because you can really move. I could use a running back as a wide receiver. It certainly gives you that extra ammo out there on the field. Let's just say you do have a flex player, wherever he comes from, whether that's a running back, a wide receiver, and he gets you 10 points, a tight end gets you 7. Let's just say a good defense will get you 8 points, and a good kicker, you know, had a great game. Get you 8 points, 94 points. That's kind of where and that's going to win most of your games. Now, I think that really it should be clear on how we, at least by now anyway, how we can manipulate those scores around and how you can – it's all about the matchup. It's all about the matchup. Just because, for example, and just because you may have an Indianapolis Colts playing a lousy Detroit Lions, which wasn't the case last year, but we'll use them for historical purposes, maybe you could pick the Colts to win by a landslide against the Lions. But on the field collectively, what are those players going to give you, especially, let's, you know, when you got to look at the matchup of the person that you're playing. So the matchups are huge when looking at setting your lineup and so forth. Now, I'll be glad when we get to have Jeff Kurtz back on with us. I did try to reach out to him. I know he's on vacation, and he's going to catch up with us in August. And certainly Jeff Kurtz is one of our premier experts, especially on the new draft picks, and we're going to talk about that and certainly about the fantasy football huddle. We'll get all the guys back together, and it's still the off season, so it's kind of hard to do that. Give me some rules of drafting, and we're running out of time here. Never show fear, just be confident. Be the conqueror that you are. You don't have to be cocky like me or a jerk like me. Although I do enjoy it. But don't worry about it if you didn't grab the correct guy. You can trade it. It's not the end of the world. A really important strategy for fantasy football, have a plan. Ideally, you know which pick you have to pick before the draft. Run through your plan. Run through your scenarios. Okay, if this guy's picked here, I want to go here. Have your spreadsheet together. I'm going to tell it's a lifesaver. Practice makes perfect. Jump in ESPN, Yahoo, they all have the mock drafts, and we'll have mock drafts right here on the balance. And just practice. Get in those mock draft auction lobbies and see, okay, well, this scenario happens. This is the direction I'm going. And if you find yourself getting squeezed out of a position, don't panic. Say you wait too long on quarterbacks on a 14-teamer. Instead of reaching for someone like Sam Bradford, grab yet another running back or, you know, a decent tight end. Give yourself something to trade with. Bradford or someone like him will still be around later on. So don't worry about it. Now, talking about the snake draft. If you're at the end of your snake draft, grab what you need when you can. Let's say your pick, you pick and you really want a good wide receiver. You see there's at least eight guys left, so you could live and you could get by with what you have. But just grab what you need as quickly as you can, and don't worry about the bye weeks. I never worry about the bye weeks. Of course, you want to adjust your lineups accordingly, but I'm talking about when it comes to draft strategy. A lot of draft charts say, bye week here. Don't worry about that. And again, you know, we're going to get into this, but most importantly, have fun, guys. Have a lot of fun doing it. I know I do. Fantasy Football Huddle going to be joining us every Saturday as the football season moves along, and we're glad you're a part of it. My minions, I want to tell you again, thanks for sticking around with us during our technical difficulties at the beginning of the show. We always try to bring the best high-quality show to you, always, 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 always. Well, guys, that's going to do it for me. I am out of here, and I certainly hope everybody has a good week. Remember, Indiana talks today between 3 and 5, and we'll be on there, and hopefully Indiana talks. People will not hear the, I guess, the technical difficulties that we have. Well, guys, I'm out of here. Don't drink and drive. It ain't cool. We'll see you next week.